Hello, everyone. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Steve, and we are on day two of this month's lifestyle feature called Giant Continues to Lead the Way. Yesterday, we focused more on Giant, the company, and Giant CEO Tony Lowe and his success and his passion for bicycles. And today, we're going to veer a little off into something called bike etiquette. But before we do, let me introduce our teachers again from yesterday. Gordon is back with us. Welcome back, Gordon.
Thank you, Steve. Hello, everyone. I'm here and I'm feeling content and happy to talk more about bicycling.
Yeah, biking. I can't imagine my life without it. I do enjoy it. I don't know if it's a lifestyle. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. I have to think about that. But I do know that for Linda, it is a lifestyle.
It is. Hi, Steve. Hi, Gordon. Yeah, I feel like Tony Lowe does about cycling. Like, I feel very passionate about it. And I also like to share my passion with others about cycling.
Really? You never shared it with me.
We have had conversations, many conversations about bicycling, too.
True. Okay, that's true. All right. What is it about biking that is so cool? Well, yesterday we learned that it is easy on the environment. Okay, so if you're using bikes as a means of transportation, you're saving the environment. You're not creating CO2 emissions or pollution in the air. And so that's good. Another thing is it's healthy, right? It energizes your body and it gives you a good workout. It can create unity. And this is something that Tony Lowe mentioned. With his family, he would go out on bike rides, not long ones, but short bike rides with his kids and his wife, and it was a great time to spend with your family. It's something you can share. It's an activity that you can do together and grow together as a family. So it creates unity. It creates enthusiasm for exploration. If you enjoy exploring new places, getting on a bike and doing that is great. It's fun. Sometimes to get lost on a bike, right? You don't have to worry about making a U-turn or finding certain things like you would in a car. I think it's a lot of fun to get lost on a bike. You can go down narrow places and you can actually lift up your bike if you need to go up some stairs or something, right?
Exactly. That's what I love about biking is that it gives me an opportunity to explore. Like, I see a path, oh, let me see where that path takes me, you know, and I can just go do that and not, well, hopefully won't get too lost, but, you know.
Yeah, you'll find your way home eventually.
Exactly.
Yeah. One thing that maybe the passion for me, one thing that I really enjoyed about biking as a young kid, I think I really enjoyed it in high school. I think that's where my passion started, is the fact that I thought, wow, this machine can take me places that are far, far away, that I don't need a license. This was before I got my car license, and it enabled me to explore, as we just mentioned. I think that's something that really hooked me into biking when I was younger. I was like, wow, I could go to places that are far away and explore, and that really appealed to me as a young man. All right, we're going to talk about some things from yesterday really quickly. We'll summarize a point or two, and then we'll get into today's lesson. So let's talk with Gordon for a moment. Gordon, what's something that stuck out to you yesterday?
Well, I didn't know a lot about the company Giant, so I enjoyed hearing more about them yesterday, that they're 40 years old. Linda also told me a fact yesterday that I didn't know, that they sell the most bikes worldwide. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, in terms of sales and revenue, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I've heard of the company before, but I'm impressed by all the work they do.
Yeah, okay. Linda, what about you?
Well, going back to the whole idea of being passionate about something, that really makes a difference in your job and whatever you're doing. And for Tony Lowe, he feels passionate about cycling, and it shows in his work and, yeah, in his personality as well.
Right. And there's a picture of him on page 28 in your advanced magazines, and you can see he's having a great time on his bike. big smile on his face, and he just loves it. All right, well, let's move in then to today's lesson on page 29. If you have your magazines, please open them up, and let's begin reading together, Promoting Bike Etiquette.
Promoting Bike Etiquette. The good people at Giant understand that as bicycling becomes more popular, people need to be more aware of bike etiquette. At its core, bike etiquette means being mindful of others who share the road with you, including pedestrians, motorists, and other bicyclists. Bike etiquette is very similar to driving etiquette, so whether you're biking in a park or on the street, obey the rules of the road, just as you would if you were driving a car. For example, look to the right before making a right-hand turn, and always keep to the right so others can pass. Also, while you're riding, don't ever suddenly stop in the middle of the path. If you absolutely need to stop to check your cell phone, pull off the path completely. Parents, teaching your kids bike etiquette is a good way to prepare them for driving a scooter or car. So start early.
All right, friends, we are talking about bike etiquette. And this is kind of a interesting looking word. It's got a Q in it and some T's. And let's talk about etiquette for a moment. Linda, what is etiquette?
Well, this word probably comes from French, just from the way it looks. And another word for etiquette is manners. And that's just a set of rules or customs that we use to be polite, that they're accepted behavior in society. And to be polite or to show manners, that's what basically etiquette is.
Okay. I think of etiquette, there are many different places, right, where etiquette is needed, many different social situations where etiquette is required. Gordon, can you think of another place where etiquette is needed?
Other than cycling, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, in the business environment, as business interactions come with a certain type of etiquette, that we are respectful to our fellow colleagues and we do what our boss says. Mm-hmm. There's a kind of rules that aid us to do what's appropriate in the workplace.
Yeah, and what's interesting about etiquette often is that these rules are unspoken and they're not written down, right? It's just
right.
Something that you learn as you spend time in this certain social situation. I think of table etiquette, mm-hmm. How to behave at a dinner table. And you learn this, I learned some of it growing up in my family's, at my home. And so, if you're doing something that's not polite or considered polite, your mom or your dad would say, son, get your elbows off the table. For some reason, that's poor etiquette. Or a certain way to hold your spoon or mm-hmm. your fork, or a certain way to cut the meat with your knife, and what fork to use with your salad. And it can get pretty complicated, right?
Yeah.
One of the fascinating things about etiquette that I think is that we have... Etiquette varies more between cultures than, say, morality, say, the moral rules. Mm-hmm. They tend to be quite similar, but especially working somewhere like here at Studio Classroom, we have people from different parts of the world, and sometimes we learn about different rules of etiquette that we didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And some rules can be different, completely the opposite, you know, depending on what culture or what country you're in. For example, with the dining etiquette, like making sounds when you eat.
Mm-hmm.
In Western countries, it's considered impolite to make any sort of noise when you eat. But in other countries, it shows that you're enjoying the food.
That's
if you
right.
slurp it, or if you, make some sort of noise while you're eating.
Like a burp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I was taught, too, when I came to Asia. If people make noise, it means, they're really digging in and enjoying the food. So etiquette does differ from different cultures. Bike etiquette needs to be learned. I mean, we talked yesterday about how biking culture has taken off here in Taiwan, And etiquette kind of has to catch up with the biking, you know. And it happens anywhere in the world. If a country isn't used to having a lot of drivers on the road, it's going to take some time before people start learning the rules of the road and passing those down to the next generation. And that's true with bikes as well. At its core, though, Gordon, what is bike etiquette?
Well, it means being aware, or the word used in the article is mindful, of other people who are also using the road, which are pedestrians, people walking, people driving cars, maybe people on motorbikes or mopeds.
Right. Another way to say that is to be considerate or to be gracious towards others who are sharing the road or the bike path with you. Don't think that you're the only person on the road and that you have full control of the path. You know, you have to remember that you're sharing this path with other people.
Right, and that's something that has to be learned. Like, you might not think about it until you're that person who gets cut off or almost gets run over by a cyclist or a motorist. And so that makes you more aware.
Right. Line 5, we see the word pedestrian. I want to just call your attention to that because that's kind of a big word. This means someone who walks, right?
Someone walking down the pavement or walking along the road.
It's interesting how we have such a big word for such a simple thing, a person who walks, pedestrian. The P-E-D prefix, by the way, P-E-D is the same prefix for the word pedal that you have on your bikes. And P-E-D is I'm not sure if it's Latin or Greek, but it's a prefix meaning foot. Okay. Bike etiquette is very similar to driving etiquette, driving a car. There's etiquette for that as well. So whether you're biking or on a street, obey the rules of the road just as you would if you're driving a car. All right, so let's talk about a few of these things. The author gives us an example on line 10. Linda, what is that?
That you have to make sure you look before you make a turn.
Okay. The article says look right, and actually I think it would be better to look left if you're making a right-hand turn, but regardless, you should look both ways.
Exactly.
Look both ways. Be aware of your surroundings when you're making turns and when you're biking. Look left. Look right. Who's around you? What kind of danger might be coming towards you? You might be coming up with a car or a truck or some people who are walking.
I think this is possibly the most important rule for everyone using the road, is to look around you. If you're walking down the street and you're going to quickly turn left, or even, it sounds really simple, but even if you're just going to quickly stop, you know, there might be someone who's walking behind you going the same speed as you, and they're just following you, they're comfortable, they're fine, and then you just stop and they're going to walk into you. And if you're on a bike or a motorbike, that's going to be a big problem.
Yeah. I'm amazed sometimes I see people driving scooters and bicycles and even cars, and they'll make right-hand turns without even looking about what's coming left. And I think the expectation is that people will yield to them, or they'll make an allowance for people who are coming onto the main road, and everything will be okay. And in most cases, it is okay.
Mm-hmm.
But there's going to be those times where it's not going to be okay, and that's when accidents happen.
All right. And I think in Asia, people are more yielding. Like, they will take into consideration that, there probably will be something or somebody coming that shouldn't be there, so they expect that. While in the West, like in the U.S., people will not, and so you'll get into an accident much faster if you do this behavior.
Yeah,
this behavior.
Right. And I think there might be some potential for cultures clashing when a Westerner comes to Taiwan or an Asian person goes to the United States, and they're driving, and it takes some time to get used to the different ways people drive and the different habits and etiquette that people have. It's going to be a little different, and there has to be some flexibility when you travel overseas and drive on roads. All right, what's another thing the author mentions? Keep right so others can pass. And thirdly, Gordon, on line 12, it says, also while you're riding, don't do what?
Now, this is what I just mentioned. Don't stop suddenly in the middle of the path.
Yeah. This has happened to me, and I think I had a very severe accident because someone just decided to stop, check their cell phone right in the middle of the path, and that could have been avoided. You know, we don't have turn signals or we don't have brake lights on bicycles, and so we have to be aware that if there's someone behind us, we need to kind of let them know what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I read in a different place was, speaking of turning and so forth, giving hand signals on the street. You can give a left-hand turn signal with your left hand. Also, if you're going to turn right, use your right hand. Now,
are those universal signals?
They're not, and this is something that I want to discuss really quickly. It's interesting because a left-hand turn signal, we know, is with our left hand, but also years ago it was taught you can do a right-hand turn signal with your left hand, because if you're in a car, you can't reach out across your car through the window and signal with your right hand. And so people think, I will make a right-hand turn and use my left hand to signal. That's going to be confusing. So if you're on a bike, all that to say, if you're on a bike and you want to make a right-hand turn, use your right hand. Okay, and just generally let people behind you know what you're doing. Pull off the path completely if you have to check your cell phone. And finally, on line 15, Linda, how is this good for parents?
Well, it's good for parents to teach their kids good bike etiquette, because that will prepare them for the day when they drive a scooter or a car, right? So some of these same basic rules will be used later when they want to drive a car.
Absolutely. And I just love when I see parents instructing their kids out in the park on bike paths. I can hear them shouting commands. Maybe the kids are up a few meters ahead of them. They're shouting commands. Stay to the right, stay to the right. Don't do this, you know. And that's a great, great time for parents to help their kids know the etiquette of the road, so that when they grow older, get a scooter maybe or a car, they'll have this awareness already in them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on then to the next paragraph at the top of the right-hand column on page 29, titled Cyclist or Bicyclist.
Cyclist or bicyclist? It's often asked, what's the difference between a cyclist and a bicyclist? Some might think the answer depends on whether one has all the bike gear or not, like handlebar gadgets, skin-tight jerseys, wraparound sunglasses, and teardrop helmets. Actually, though, the difference lies in the condition of the heart. Anyone who rides a bicycle for transportation or pleasure is a bicyclist. The term cyclist, on the other hand, describes someone whose life revolves around bicycles. For a cyclist, bicycles are a passion, a way of life. Therefore, a young high school student who daydreams about planning her next ride up a mountain could be just as much of a cyclist as the biking professional who makes his living racing in competitions.
Thank you, Linda. And friends, if you've just joined us, we are on page 29 of this month's lifestyle feature in your Advanced magazine. And we thank you for joining us here at Advanced. We know that you have a lot of choices in how you study English, and we thank you for joining us for this lesson today. Well, the question is often asked, what's the difference between cyclist and bicyclist? People are a little confused. Doesn't it mean the same thing? They're both involving bicycles, right? Well, there is a difference, but it's not what you might think. I bike around a lot here in the city, and sometimes I go into the mountains, and I see I see people who, they have a lot of gear. They have a lot of gear. All the professional stuff. They have a really high-end bicycle, and they have a lot of gear. What's some of the gear that's mentioned, Linda, in this paragraph?
Well, they have a lot of gadgets that they put on their handlebars. That includes lights and like a bicycle computer that tells you how fast you're going, how far you've gone, and other things to, you know, that are not necessary, but they're very convenient and helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the clothing or the attire that's associated with biking, such as skin-tight jerseys, and also bike pants as well, which are skin-tight. Sunglasses, those special wraparound ones that actually look really cool.
They do.
I don't have a pair yet, but because it's on my list. And the teardrop helmets, and those are those professional-looking helmets.
Yeah. So people, some people, not everybody, I think, they buy this stuff, and they think it makes them a cyclist. But they don't really have that awareness yet of the bike etiquette or even the physical stamina that would be commensurate with the challenge that they're in.
And I'm not sure if when they buy these things, they think that it's making them, you know, a real cyclist. I think maybe they think they need to buy these things in order to go cycling. So,
okay.
Like, they need to get the best bike, you know. They need all of the jerseys and the, you know, the bike pants with the padding in them and, you know, all these things to make the biking experience real. Like, for me, I don't even have any of these things. I probably should get some of them, but yeah, it's not necessary,
right?
You know, to go cycling.
Yeah, and I want to explode that myth that you need all this stuff to go biking or to enjoy biking. You really don't. And what I like now, there's kind of this anti-culture, anti-biking culture. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but now you see some guys, like these young kids, on these single-speed bicycles going up the mountain. They don't even have gears. And their bikes are stripped down. They've got nothing on their handlebars. They don't have the jerseys. They don't have the pants. And this is regular kids in street clothes going up mountains on these very simple bikes. And I love to see that. It's like saying, you don't have to have all of this equipment to be a cyclist and to enjoy cycling.
One of the things that I really loved about reviewing this article with you guys is I've realized how versatile this hobby is, that there's so many different ways to do it. We talked about Tony Lowe doing it with his family, and we talked about like people getting all the gear and going out on their own and trying to go as fast as possible or as far as possible. And yeah, you can do this with no money if you just have a simple bike, or you can just rent a U-bike and travel a little while, or you can spend a lot of money and do things, but it's available to everyone, which
yeah,
I really like.
Exactly. That's another great thing about biking. Anyone can do it, you know, regardless of age, you know, size, economic situation, because you can find a really cheap bike, you know, or you can find a really expensive bike, depending on whatever budget that you have. And, you know, you don't have to go very far. You don't have to go up mountains. You can do really low-impact biking,
mm-hmm.
and you still get the benefits of biking.
That's right. All right, well, getting back to the question, cyclist or bicyclist, I guess it all depends on the condition of the heart. That's what the author says, Linda. So anyone who rides a bicycle for transportation or pleasure can be called a bicyclist, and that would be Gordon here on my left.
Yeah, I
do that for transportation, and you commute using a bicycle.
Yeah, I think of myself as a bicyclist. I cycle home, and sometimes at the weekend I go for a cycle down at the river.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is for me, it's not a way of life. It's not a philosophy. But I know Linda is different to me.
Linda, yes.
Yeah, and I've become a cyclist, so I do like cycling is a passion because I cycle everywhere. Like if there's a way for me to get there by bike, then I'd much rather take that way. But before, I was a bicyclist. So actually, I made that transition. being in Taiwan has made me a cyclist. But before, I would always use it, you know, to get around the city. It was very convenient. I mean, I enjoyed doing it because it was environmentally friendly and it was good for me. But I never thought of riding, you know, in the mountains or going on long distance bike rides. But that changed when I came here.
Right, right. Yes. So you have to be a bicyclist first. And then if you enjoy it and if something grabs your attention, then you become a cyclist. So that's kind of the entry level right there. And so a young person who is planning his or her next ride up a mountain or can't wait to get out on the bike again could be just as much of a cyclist as the professional who tours around the world and participates in competitions and makes money. So it's a state of mind, right? It's the passion of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, friends, we're so thankful that you've joined us. We hope that you can join us again tomorrow on Wednesday. We'll have another lesson for you here at Advanced. And join us for that. Until then, my name is Steve. And for all of us here at Advanced, have a great day.